Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. And as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderators for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Mary, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop. And the title of the program today is Brain Tumors, Current Treatments, and Hope for the Future. It's a very important program, and I know it's one that many of you have waited for us to offer, and we're delighted to be able to offer you this program. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, as well as brain tumor organizations. And it's because of that collaboration that we have been able to reach so many of you on the call today. Now, we have on the call today over 626 participants. And you come from all over the United States. You come from large cities and small cities. You also come from suburban areas, as well as rural and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Argentina, Canada, India, Mexico, Pakistan, Venezuela, and the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world, and it's a great credit to you that you are spending the next hour with us. Now, today's program has been made possible by an educational grant from Genentech Biooncology, and I really want to thank them for their support of our program today. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about the program today, topics that will be covered in our speaker, and there also is information about all the different organizations that have collaborated with us to make this program possible, and all of which offer free services and are available to you as a resource. Now, there also is an evaluation form at the end of today's program, and I would ask you to please complete that evaluation form. That evaluation form is very important to us. You know, your feedback really helps us as we plan future programs. Indeed, today's program was one that many of you have requested us to offer. And you're telling us what you want us to do. We really try very hard to implement the suggestions you make. So please do take a moment at the end of the program and complete the evaluation form, send it back to us, and we'll try very hard to follow what your recommendations are. Now, we have a wonderful speaker on the program today, and I want to introduce Dr. Bruce. Dr. Jeffrey Bruce is the Edgar M. Hospian Professor of Neurological Surgery, Vice Chairman, Department of Neurosurgery, Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. He is also co-director of Brain Tumor Center, director of Bartoli Brain Tumor Research Laboratory. Now, as you can see, Dr. Bruce wears many hats. He also has been the Cancer Care Physician of the Year. He was the recipient of the Cancer Care Physician of the Year Award this past year. So he's really, he's someone who has spoken on these programs for many years. He has been one of our most consistent speakers, and I'm delighted to have him speak today. And he's going to cover an overview of brain tumors, current standard of care, new treatment approaches, clinical trials, managing side effects, communicating with the healthcare team, and quality of life concerns. I now turn the program over to Dr. Bruce.
So for those of you who are new to the brain tumor area, there are about 40,000 new brain tumors that are diagnosed every year in the United States. And these tumors seem to be tend to be more common in younger people. So it's not necessarily a disease of the elderly. It seems to catch people more in their mid-prime areas of their life. And so these tumors can affect very important everyday functions, and that's part of the way we approach these tumors and finding ways to improve treatment and quality of life at the same time. Now, just for some background, there are two types of brain tumors out there. There are the primary brain tumors and metastatic brain tumors. Primary brain tumors are those that actually begin in the brain itself and grow from within the brain. Metastatic brain tumors are tumors that have spread from other areas, from other tumors in the body. These are most common with lung cancer, breast cancer, and colon cancer. What we're really speaking about today is mostly the primary brain tumors. And the most common type of brain tumors are called gliomas. Among those gliomas, the most common type of tumor is something called a glioblastoma. There are also many other different types of gliomas, such as ependymomas and oligodendrogliomas and astrocytomas. and they present a whole spectrum of different types of tumors, and the type of tumor that somebody has will determine what kind of treatment is best and how best to predict how the tumor will behave in the future. Now, the most common type of tumor, which is glioblastoma, is a type of cancer, and it is a tumor that begins in the brain. These tumors are invasive into the brain, and that means that as they grow, the tumor cells mix in with normal brain cells, and that's one of the limiting factors in trying to remove a tumor like this. These tumors rarely spread to other areas of the body, so they don't really metastasize the way other types of cancers do. But because they grow and invade into the brain, they present certain problems that really define the type of treatment that's ultimately going to be necessary. Now, among gliomas, there are low-grade gliomas and high-grade gliomas. The low-grade gliomas are more slow-growing. The high-grade are more fast-growing, such as the glioblastoma. Most low-grade tumors eventually become high-grade tumors. So given enough time, a low-grade tumor will eventually progress to a high-grade tumor. And some tumors can contain mixtures of high-grade and low-grade. One of the things most people ask me are whether or not the number of brain tumors is increasing. And there have been some studies that show that maybe these tumors are increasing in the elderly population, but it also may be that we're just having better methods of detecting and diagnosing these tumors. So it's really not clear. Another question people always ask is, what caused this tumor? And although we've done a lot of research on gliomas, it's not really clear what causes them. When you look at different types of tumors, such as lung cancer, well, we know that smoking causes lung cancer, but we don't have a similar causation factor for gliomas. There is some question about whether certain types of radiation can cause this, or certain viruses, different types of chemicals. But despite a lot of work that's been done, they really have not come up with anything that involves chemicals or pollutions, or these tumors, except in rare cases, are not inherited either. So that, in other words, these are not necessarily passed on in families except in rare instances. And you've probably heard a lot in the press recently about cell phones, and I can tell you there's been no definitive study, but most of the studies to date have not shown any relationship between cell phones and brain tumors. So as far as we know, there's no causation there, but there's still studies that are underway. Now, brain tumors can cause symptoms based on where they're located. Many times, a person that has a brain tumor will first know they have a brain tumor by having a seizure or by having headaches. Usually, the headaches are worse in the morning when the pressure is higher in the head. And this pressure can cause anything from nausea to visual loss or vomiting. And depending on the location, it can cause other problems. So a tumor in the back of the brain might affect your vision. A tumor in the middle of the brain may cause weakness. And it's usually necessary to do some kind of a scan or an x-ray in order to find out if someone who's having those symptoms, whether they have a brain tumor or not. The most common type of test that's done is an MRI scan, and these are usually done with contrast, and that enables the doctor to see where the tumor is, how it looks in relation to the rest of the brain, whether it's close to important blood vessels or nerves, and it can give an idea of what to expect in terms of the type of symptoms that someone may have. In some cases, you might have a CAT scan instead of an MRI scan. These are usually helpful in seeing tumors, but they don't show quite as much detail as an MRI scan. And some people even have what are called PET scans or SPECT scans, And these are scans that are similar to CAT scans or MRI scans, but instead of actually showing the tumor, it will show metabolic activity or the ability for certain areas of the tissue to process a lot of energy. So a SPECT scan can show you whether something is likely to be growing quickly or slowly. That's really the main distinction between the two. The current standard of care for someone who is diagnosed with a glioblastoma or other type of malignant glioma is some form of surgery to at least establish the diagnosis and preferably to remove as much tumor as possible. After the surgery and the diagnosis is made, there usually follows a 6-week course of radiation therapy and then some form of chemotherapy. And the most common treatment nowadays is chemotherapy with a drug called Temodar. Now, when somebody first has a tumor diagnosed on an MRI scan, they need an operation to either do a biopsy, which is to obtain a small piece of the tumor. It's usually done by what we call a needle, which is passed through the skull to take a small piece of the tumor, and that usually establishes the diagnosis. In most patients, though, particularly if the tumor is in a more favorable location, we try to remove as much of the tumor as possible, and that means doing a craniotomy or opening the skull and under direct vision, taking out as much of the tumor as possible. The limitation on this is that the tumor cells invade into the brain, so they can never be completely removed because in order to do so, you would have to remove normal parts of the brain, and that wouldn't be a good outcome. So at the time of surgery, where as much tumor is removed as possible, some of the tumor is set aside for the pathologist where they actually make the diagnosis. And when doing a craniotomy, sometimes these tumors are very soft, sometimes they're firm, and depending on the whether the tumor is hard or soft, we may use everything from a laser to a cavitron or simply just a suction to remove it. If the tumor is located in an important part of the brain that you need for talking or for walking, then we sometimes do the surgery awake where we can actually map out where the normal parts of the brain are compared to the tumor. One of the things about craniotomies or these operations to remove the tumor is that they're really not generally very painful. Some people can have some headaches afterwards, but the brain itself and the skull itself have no pain sensation. You can't feel pain in the bone or the brain. Most of the pain that people have is related to the scalp or the skin where that's cut, or to the lining around the brain, which is known as the dura. And that can give people headaches. Fortunately, these headaches are not usually long-lasting, and they go away shortly after the surgery is over. Sometimes people need an operation to put in a shunt. And a shunt is used when the tumor blocks the ability of the spinal fluid to flow throughout the brain. And when that spinal fluid builds up, it creates pressure, and a shunt simply diverts the fluid from the brain down to the abdomen where it gets absorbed. Now, when somebody is first diagnosed with a tumor, they often have a lot of brain swelling. And so it's not unusual to be put on a drug such as a type of steroid known as Decadron or dexamethasone, which will reduce the amount of swelling in the brain. These steroids have a lot of side effects, but they're very, very useful, very effective medications at reducing swelling. Some of the side effects can be anything from acne to increased appetite and weight gain. It can cause mood changes, stomach irritation, difficulty sleeping. And so we like to keep people on the smallest dose of steroids possible, but sometimes that depends on how much swelling is in the brain. And it's a very useful medication, and especially right after surgery when the swelling seems to be greater in the brain. Another drug that is used for most patients with brain tumors are what we call anticonvulsants or seizure medication. And because any kind of tumor can irritate the brain, it can cause seizures. So most people are on some form of seizure medication. The most common ones are Keppra or Dilantin or phenobarbital. And those are the most common types. And these medications can sometimes have side effects, but fortunately, the side effects are generally very mild, and they can be anything from allergic reactions to dizziness to fatigue. After a person has surgery to remove the tumor and to make the diagnosis, if it is a malignant glioma or a glioblastoma, if it is some type of a malignant tumor, then radiation therapy is needed. And radiation therapy is just simple X-ray beams. And these X-rays are used to kill the tumor cells in the brain. So the radiation is given over 30 treatments. In other words, a patient comes in Monday through Friday for 6 weeks for a total of 30 treatments. The treatments take maybe 10 or 15 minutes a day, and they're designed to kill the tumor cell while still making sure the normal brain tissue is unharmed. And so the amount of radiation that's given is given at a level that will accomplish those two things. That is, kill as much of the tumor cells while sparing the normal brain. Some of the side effects of radiation can be anything from some hair loss to fatigue to just skin irritation. And radiation therapy has really been the standard treatment for all gliomas for many years, and it's the best-known treatment that we have out there right now. So pretty much all patients with a malignant tumor will get radiation. Chemotherapy is medication that's given either intravenously, IV, or in a pill form by mouth. And chemotherapy can be used to also kill tumor cells. It also has side effects such as nausea, vomiting, tiredness. And the most common chemotherapy that's given today is something called temozolomide or Temodar. And the development of Temodar in the last 10 to 15 years has been a big advance in the treatment of brain tumors. This is really the first chemotherapy that's found to be effective in malignant gliomas. And normally it's given either during the radiation or shortly thereafter, and it is one of the really chemotherapies that have been shown to be effective for these tumors. And pretty much nowadays it is the standard of treatment, meaning everybody gets Temodar along with their radiation. So the standard treatment then is surgery, followed by radiation, and then chemotherapy, and that chemotherapy being Temodar. So I want to sort of move on now to advances in the treatment of gliomas. We've talked mainly about how a tumor is diagnosed, what the standard treatment is. Now we'll talk a little bit about some of the surgical chemotherapy and radiation advances. In surgery, some of the advances that we used are to make the surgery safer and to allow the surgeon to remove more of the tumor. And to do that, we've developed everything from brain mapping, where these surgeries are done awake to map out where the normal parts of the brain are. And we also have what's called image-guided surgery, and that's where a CAT scan or MRI scan done before the surgery is connected to computers in the operating room, and the computers are then used in sort of a GPS system, so the surgeon can point to any area on the brain and look up on the monitor, the screen, to see what part of the brain he's touching and where that is in relationship to the tumor. And what these things do is allow the surgeon to be safer and more effective in the surgery. And some of the areas of new treatments and experimental treatments are to use new methods of drug delivery. One of those methods is called intraarterial chemotherapy, and that is instead of giving a drug intravenously, it can be given in the arterial system. And that means the catheter can be placed right in the arteries that go to the brain so that the chemotherapy goes directly into the blood vessels that are going into the brain. And what that does is it allows you to get higher amounts of the drug and avoid a lot of the side effects that happen when you give the drug throughout the rest of the body. Now, these are experimental treatments. They're not proven yet, but it's one of the areas that's being looked at. The other area is something called convection-enhanced delivery. And this is a relatively new method where the drugs, instead of given into the blood vessels, it's given directly into the tumor and the surrounding brain. So the way this is done is in the operating room, a simple plastic catheter, a simple hollow tube is placed into the tumor and then brought out through the skull and through the scalp and connected to a pump at the side of the bed. And for several days, the drug is just pumped through this catheter right directly into the tumor and into the surrounding brain. So you can get extremely high concentrations of the drug, and you avoid all of the side effects of having this drug flow throughout the rest of the body. Now, in terms of radiation therapy, there are also a lot of advances, and most of the advances there are using radiation to try and make it safer and to deliver higher amounts of radiation to the tumor itself. So many of you are familiar with something called stereotactic guided radiation, and stereotactic guided radiation just means that the radiation is given to a smaller area at very high doses. And there are a lot of different types of stereotactic radiation. There's gamma knife and cyber knife, proton beam, linear accelerator. All of these are different ways to give radiation at high doses with a very small area being radiated. Most people with gliomas, however, really benefit from the standard radiation, which we call fractionated radiation. And that's the radiation I talked about as the standard treatment, which is 30 treatments with the X-ray. And that is in distinction to the stereotactic radiosurgery. Most stereotactic radiosurgery is done for tumors other than gliomas, but in certain special cases, stereotactic radiosurgery may be useful. Now, one of the more rapidly growing areas of brain tumor treatment and research is the area of chemotherapy. And chemotherapy is, again, just different types of medications and drugs that are used to kill tumors. One of the more common areas that's being looked at now is the area of angiogenesis inhibition. And what that means is that there are a number of drugs out there that work by blocking the blood vessels that provide blood to the tumor. One of the most common drugs out there is one that's being tested in clinical trials right now called Avastin, and some of you may have already had that drug, but that's one of the more popular angiogenesis inhibitors that's being looked at right now. Other drugs, most of which you probably haven't heard of yet because they're still in the experimental phase, a lot of these drugs are used to block certain parts of a tumor. For instance, there are anti-invasion drugs, that is, drugs that block the tumor cells from invading into the brain. There are other drugs that are called growth factor inhibitors, and what they do is they block the growth factors that a tumor can sometimes make. And there are other types of chemotherapies that are called differentiating agents and tyrosine kinase inhibitors. And what these fancy names mean is that these are just drugs that block part of the machinery in the tumor cell that causes it to grow. And many of these drugs are in clinical trials right now, where we'll hopefully know in the near future whether they're actually truly effective against brain tumors. And if they are, they will be available for everybody to use. Some of the other new areas of treatment are areas such as gene therapy and immunotherapy or vaccine therapy. The gene therapy is, these are very complicated methods of engineering such things as viruses or bacteria, but mostly viruses, where a simple virus can be manipulated so that it can be injected into a tumor and it can actually kill tumor cells. And the use of gene therapy and viral therapy is still something that's very sophisticated. It's being worked on a number of centers. And right now it is a somewhat promising experimental therapy. One of the more promising areas of treatment is something called immunotherapy or vaccine therapy. And these are different treatments that use the body's own immune system to kill tumor cells. The way your immune system works is that when you catch a cold or a virus, your immune system is stimulated and it works to kill any bacteria or virus that gets into your body. And the immune system is constantly looking for viruses and bacteria, and they're seen as foreign invaders. To the immune system, they're not supposed to be there. And the immune system, when it sees it, that it gets all stimulated, and it creates new immune cells that actually go out and destroy any of those foreign invaders. Well, just like a virus or bacteria, tumors are seen as foreign to the immune system as well. So your body has a natural tendency, when you develop a tumor, your own immune system has a natural tendency to try and kill those tumor cells. The problem is that the immune system is not very effective, and these tumor cells can grow faster than your immune system can get rid of them. And so a lot of the immunotherapy or vaccine therapy is designed to create methods that stimulate your own immune system to kill the tumor cells. And vaccines are often made up of parts of a tumor or proteins that are normally found in a tumor, and these are packaged into a vaccine that, when injected back into the patient, can stimulate their immune system. And this is a very promising area of brain tumor research, although right now it is still very much an experimental treatment. So I want to move on in the remaining time we have and talk a little bit about clinical trials and managing side effects and quality of life considerations. So what you need to know about clinical trials are, these are tumors that are mostly for tumors that are recurrent or tumors that grow back. And normally, if you have a brain tumor, you're going to be treated with radiation and Temodar. But if your tumor grows back after that, then you might want to consider a clinical trial where a new treatment is being tested. These are mostly for tumors that have already grown back despite the best treatment. And most of these clinical trials are done in major medical centers where there are brain tumor specialists, and that's probably one of the bigger things they do, is put together these clinical trial programs. And this is important for patients because it keeps them involved. You may feel that your tumor has grown back despite the best treatments, and it's natural to want to do something further. And it also helps keep the patient involved in continuing treatments and helps keep the family involved as well. So I think that it's important to have realistic expectations for clinical trials, and that is, we know that chemotherapy and radiation therapy can be effective, but that in most cases these tumors will grow back. And it's a matter of trying to overcome all of the obstacles in treating a tumor, and that's really where these new experimental treatments are coming. Now, moving on to communication, I want to just talk a little bit about communicating with your healthcare team. When someone is given a diagnosis of a brain tumor, it can be very frightening, both for the patient and their family. And, of course, everybody wants to do the best thing. And the trying to deal with a brain tumor and all of the healthcare problems that come with it, it's very important to communicate well with your healthcare team to avoid being frustrated. And the best advice we can give you is to find a specialist that knows what they're doing in the brain tumor area, and carry a notebook. Write down questions, write down what you're told, and it'll help you as your mind is distracted. It'll help you later on when you're trying to remember what you spoke about. And it's important to make sure that instructions are understood. If your doctor tells you something, make sure you understand what he or she is saying, and don't be afraid to ask questions until you understand what is expected. It's important to remain honest with your family and with your physicians. And it's important to be skeptical about anecdotes. One of the things that happens when you're diagnosed with a brain tumor, suddenly everybody you know has a brain tumor story about a friend or a relative. And I think it's important to remember that these stories may not bear much relevance to your own case, and therefore I wouldn't put too much weight on what somebody's aunt or uncle happened to go through. It's really better to talk to your doctor about realistic questions and realistic expectations. I think you should never be afraid of a second opinion. If you're not sure about your own doctor or just want to feel better with a second opinion, those things are perfectly reasonable. And then finally, I would urge people to consider clinical trials at academic centers. Now, when a tumor is first diagnosed, the kinds of questions that need to be answered are, is the tumor operable? What are the risks? Are there other treatments that are available? Can the treatment wait? What happens if there's no treatment? And those are individual questions that has to be answered by the doctor with the individual patient, because they can vary from patient to patient. Now, when treatment decisions are made, I think it's important and useful to keep your own records and keep copies of your own scans. It's important to understand the choices that you have, understanding what treatment options are available. And this can always be better by sharing your concerns with your family and the rest of your healthcare team so that you don't have to feel like you're making the decisions all on your own. When somebody's first diagnosed with a tumor, there can be a real shock to the system, and it's important to understand that the response that most people have is a very common one. There's a question about your quality of life. There's sometimes denial about the diagnosis. There's guilt about it. There's anger and depression. And I think it's important to know that these are normal responses, and sometimes they require it requires some help in dealing with that, and sometimes that can be anything from talking to friends and family or talking to your physician, or in some cases taking medication to help you through the most difficult parts. Now, I just want to close a little bit about by giving some quality of life practical suggestions that everybody should be aware of, and that is, first of all, remaining organized and keep a list of things to do. You can utilize your friends and family who want to help out. Keep a list of things that need to be done and list those people that want to help. Having a good answering machine is useful so that people can leave messages. You don't have to feel inclined to answer every phone call every moment of the day. It's useful to ask a family member to help with all the paperwork that's going to come up. Find a family member who's usually well organized and have them help with the paperwork. set aside time for yourself. Sometimes once all the treatments and visits to the doctor start kicking in, you sometimes forget to take some time for yourself. It's important to be patient and learn to relax and even allow yourself to cry if you need to. These are normal emotions. Overall, I think it's important to have as positive an attitude as you can. It's always hard to predict what the future is going to be, and because of that, I think it's important that you continue to live your life to the fullest. You may have a diagnosis of a brain tumor, but nobody's telling you that you can't do certain things. As long as you're able to, you can celebrate birthdays, you can go out to dinner, you can watch a ball game, you can do all the things you like to do, and those are things that should be encouraged because that's really simply part of continuing to live your life. I'm going to stop here for now, and I think we're ready for questions.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Bruce, for just an outstanding presentation. You really covered a lot of issues and concerns that people probably on the call wanted to know, but I'm sure there are questions for you, and so we now do have time for questions. I'm going to ask Mary to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions, and Mary, we'll start taking all the questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, may press the pound key. Our first question comes from Allison S.
Yes, I'd like to know if you can give us some information on accessing clinical trials living in England.
Okay. Excellent question, Allison. Thank you. Nice to have you on the call. Dr. Bruce.
The question is clinical trials in England. Now, I know that in England and areas of Europe, there are a lot of clinical trials. They tend to be mostly at the major medical centers. I don't have specific information on England, but I would imagine that anybody who is reasonably good with the Internet should be able to track down some clinical trials in England, particularly in London. I'm sure places like Queen Square have protocols, and I think the Internet has become a very good and sophisticated way to look for things like that.
And, you know, the Macmillan Cancer Support Group in all of the UK and in London certainly is a wonderful resource to start with. They actually have many offices throughout the UK, and they are staffed by information specialists who actually can answer all kinds of questions. So it is the Macmillan Cancer Fund, and they are really Cancer Support, actually. They do have a location in London on 89 Albert Embankment, but they have other locations throughout London as well. And they do have a website and numbers that one can call. Does that help, Allison? I hope that will be helpful. That's a really good a good resource to start with, and for anyone in the UK, that is a terrific resource to call. It's a different organization than Cancer Care, but it's a charitable organization, and they are staffed by people who really know all the resources there are and can connect you to the hospitals and all that. So thank you. Good question. Our next question.
Our next question comes from Paulette B.
Hi. My husband's brother died of a brain tumor. My husband has had a brain tumor for 12 years, and my daughter was diagnosed 5 years ago with a brain tumor. Is there any place that's doing this rare hereditary study?
In what part of the country do you live in, just so we have some sense of?
I'm in New York, Buffalo, New York
okay.
area,
okay.
and she's
excellent.
Down in D.C.
Okay, excellent, okay. Dr. Okay. Bruce?
Off the top of my head, I think there are at Johns Hopkins, I believe they are doing a study and a family registry to look at that kind of question. I don't know for sure, but I think the Johns Hopkins group, again, I think if you go on the Internet, they are probably the most known group for looking at familial and hereditary aspects of brain tumors.
And if I might add, because of the location, being in Buffalo, you're not probably, you are a bit of a distance from Roswell Park Cancer Center, but that is a comprehensive center up in that area. And then in D.C., you have the National Cancer Institute, and they actually have a whole clinical trial setting there. And there's an 1-800, the number for cancer. So that might be a wonderful resource in addition to Johns Hopkins to actually consider looking into this. And also, I just want to add that with a lot of that, the experience that you are dealing with in terms of all the family members with brain tumors, please do take advantage of the support services that many of our organizations offer. I'll just speak to Cancer Cares and take advantage of calling us at our 1-800-813-HOPE number for support and counseling and anything we can do to help. So please do that as well. Thank you. Our next question.
Our next question comes from Wendy T.
Hi there. I'm a social worker running a brain tumor support group, and those kinds of services weren't much addressed, so I just would like to state that, the psychosocial aspect and working with oncology social workers. But one of my questions is to the doctor, how do you talk about prognosis with a glioblastoma patient?
So I think, the social workers and brain tumor support groups can be very useful. There are many places in the country that don't have them, and they tend to be mostly in the large metropolitan areas where there are enough people to support a group like that. But developing a dialogue about prognosis and long-term, I think it depends on a lot of things. I think it's a very personalized thing, and when I talk to patients about that, I try and get a feel for the family and the individual before we have that kind of a discussion, because I think those discussions are often very misinterpreted. I think one thing everybody has to realize is that the best physicians in the world cannot predict a prognosis for every patient. And the best you can do is say, well, for patients with this kind of tumor, there's a range of what you can expect, and there's the most common expectation for survival, maybe this or that. But the problem with that is that it can be misleading from an individual point of view. For one thing, we don't know on a given individual what kind of survival and response they're going to have. And the danger in trying to say that somebody is going to be an average survivor is that they may only live towards that and never allow themselves the luxury of trying to live and grow beyond that. So it tends to be kind of a limiting thing. So to try and answer your question, I try and do it on an individual basis. I give patients the facts and information about the range of expectancies, but I caution them to say you can use that as a reference point, but understand that you are an individual and we simply cannot predict how you're going to do and what to expect in the long term. It's a constantly revised discussion, because it depends on how the person is doing and how they've responded in the past.
Excellent. And I just want to say I appreciate your question very much in terms of just the concept of the many different disciplines working together. And when you mentioned the psychosocial, what that really means is the emotional and the social and the practical aspects of living with a brain tumor. And there are a lot of different components of that. Many of the people have asked questions before of some of the questions that people have. And oncology social workers are an important part of the team. Certainly here at Cancer Care, that's our entire staff. We have 60 master's level trained oncology social workers, and we are here to provide that support and counseling to people to really help them as they work with their healthcare team to really find ways to cope with the diagnosis, with what they understand to be about their brain tumor, in terms of just getting really on with their day-to-day life and getting as much quality of life as possible. I think Dr. Bruce had said really how important it is to really maintain that quality of life as much as possible. And so many people find individual counseling very helpful, or joining a support group either on the telephone or online. And it is true that some of these services tend to be in various communities, but with a national program like this, you can actually join a telephone group or an online group and really get a tremendous amount of support and just by using the telephone or of internet online groups that are professionally run groups, so you get that support talking to other people. And we also have groups for caregivers as well, so for the person themselves with a brain tumor as well as for the caregiver. So I hope that helps. We also do provide very practical assistance because there are a lot of costs involved with, of course, the experience of living with a brain tumor, and we do help to pay for some of the costs of care, costs of transportation for treatment, costs of home care and child care, so all of those things. So thank you for that excellent question. Our next question, please.
But let me just add something to that, too. I also... And the question and the answer about what do you tell people, I also think it's important to be realistic. I don't think it's useful to ignore the realities of the situation, and mostly to understand that there are going to be uncertainties. And sometimes it's helpful to have a discussion about what the patient wants to do moving forward and how to handle their family issues. So. I don't think there's a simple answer to that question other than to say making sure that your response to that answer takes care of the patient and family needs.
It's actually a question that could actually be its own conference call. There's really so much to talk about in terms of that issue. Thank you for adding that, Dr. Bruce. That's excellent. Really, thank you. And I hope that's helpful to everybody on the call as well. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Amy G. Amy, if your line is on mute, will you please unmute?
Oh, yes. Thank you. My question was in regard to a nephew of mine, and he was diagnosed in November. And we now understand that because of the kind of tumor he has, his tumor isn't amenable to the radiation or chemo. Something about the markers in the cells or the tumor, I don't quite medically understand it. And I was wondering if the doctor could speak to any trials in regard to that type of a tumor and prognosis or the diagnosis.
And could you just say how old your nephew is?
26.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. Okay. Dr. Bruce?
Well, I think that's a difficult question to answer without a lot more information. Most of the treatments, whether they're experimental or standard treatments, are based on knowing the exact type of tumor that a person has. And, yes, there are some new... very new tests, molecular biology tests, where certain aspects of the tumor can be tested to look at the types of chromosomes that may be affected or types of genes or oncogenes. And these are just sophisticated tests to analyze the tumor in a way that gives you an idea of whether the tumor is likely to be more or less likely to respond to the treatment. As to this particular patient, I just don't have enough information to be able to tell you more about what kind of treatment should be done. But I think, as in general, as we've already said, any of the major medical centers that have brain tumor centers should be able to give you a number of treatment options, regardless of what type of tumor you have. I don't know of any tumor that there isn't at least some treatment for.
Dr. Bruce, would you also just comment on the National Cancer Institute's Clinical Trials Institute in Bethesda, just a little bit about that, or that people are aware of that as a resource, just to call anyway?
Yeah, the NIH, the National Cancer Institute, the NCI, has a brain tumor group that does a comprehensive research on brain tumors. So they're doing everything from analyzing brain tumors to looking at experimental treatments and giving advice and diagnosis and advice in diagnosing and treatment of brain tumors. Now, they do have some screening process for patients that they'll see and treat, but one of the big advantages of this NCI center in Bethesda is that if you are chosen to be in a protocol or a treatment, the treatment is essentially paid for government grant. So you wouldn't have to incur any of your own expenses in being in one of these clinical trials. Now, the clinical trials that you have are limited. They're not completely open to anybody who wants, but certainly for patients that have appropriate tumors, you can go through the screening process there and decide whether there is something that they can offer you.
And so that would be that. You could just call the 1-800, the number 4 cancer, and they could give you more information about that. It certainly would be worth calling just as a resource to have just some additional information. Okay, thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Mark Kay.
Yes, I was wondering if you could address primary central nervous system lymphomas and the treatments that hopefully can deal with that.
Yeah, the question is about lymphomas in the brain, and these are very tricky tumors. They're not particularly common, and there are sort of the standard treatment for these is some form of radiation and in many cases chemotherapy. And the treatments for this are the radiation is often fairly effective in controlling these tumors initially. One of the really exciting areas is the whole concept of intra-arterial chemotherapy for these and what is known as the blood-brain barrier breakdown. And what this means is that in terms of the experimental treatments for this, the investigators are looking at ways to give a drug that opens up the blood vessels in the brain and then allows you to give the chemotherapy later so that the chemotherapy gets into the brain tissue at much higher rates. And there have been a fair amount of success with this, and it's still being looked at with other types of chemotherapy and the hopes that that some of these will be more effective than just the standard chemotherapy. So standard treatment now tends to be radiation therapy and in some cases a standard group of chemotherapy such as methotrexate. And in some cases, this chemotherapy can be given directly into the patient's spinal fluid and either through a spinal tap or through a catheter that's placed into the ventricles in the head. So these are not very common tumors, but they're treated with radiation, some form of chemotherapy, and a lot of research being done at blood-brain barrier treatments that allow more drug to get into the brain.
Excellent. And Dr. Bruce, as we conclude, would you like to add anything about just what's new on the horizon in the treatment of brain tumors?
Well, I think on the horizon, there is more research being done on brain tumors than ever before. There are many centers all around the country and international where brain tumors are being examined in ways that have never been done before. Those areas are everything from chemotherapy, where new drugs are being looked at to attack different areas of the tumor, and there are many, many drugs that are out there, and a lot of work is being done to try and figure out which type of drug will work best. There is also a lot of work being done with very unusual types of treatments, and that is gene therapy and oncoviruses. Those are sort of way out on the horizon, but there's a lot of potential enthusiasm for that. And then the other area is really the big explosion in vaccines and immunotherapy. And I think the whole concept of using your body's own immune system to get rid of your tumor is a really very appealing one, and it's caused a lot of people to do research in this area. So as I said at the beginning, this is a very exciting time to be in the brain tumor field. It seems that we have more options that are coming not only now but in the future, and it's a great place to be.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Bruce, for just an outstanding presentation, as always, just terrific. And I want to thank all of you who queued up and asked such great questions that really enhanced the call. I do want to remind you that this is a one-hour education program, but because the program is about to conclude, our services to you, those do not conclude, and those are continuous. And I want you to now feel you're part of a community of support, that you are not alone, and so for many of you all over the country and world, you are now part of a community of support. Please take advantage of the services of Cancer Care, of our social work staff. Call us, email us, visit our website, and we are here to help you. And I want to thank you all for participating today. I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.